At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm ready. Turn that on? Okay.
Yep.
All right. Welcome to American Hauntings, the podcast dedicated to the history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of American history. And welcome to our special horror movie episode for Halloween. My name is Troy Taylor. I'm the founder of American Hauntings, and I write most of the episodes. And with me is my friend, producer, and co-host, Cody Beck.
Troy, can I tell you, since I've been, five or six watching scary movies, I've always had a terrible time pronouncing the genre to where it's not offensive.
Oh, I know. I know. It is difficult.
People are like, you're not watching horror movies.
Yeah, it's horror.
Horror. And yeah. So I just want to apologize to everyone who's ever heard me talk about this beautiful genre. If I butchered the name. And this is exciting. I feel like a lot of times with these episodes, what it turns out to be is since Troy's a bigger buff in the genre than I am, and just it really, really dives into a lot of stuff. And so a lot of it ends up just being it's like an episode of Troy tries to convince Cody to watch this.
Yeah, it is. Troy says,
stay away from this no matter what
waste of
time.
It is a lot of that.
And it's so much, and it's so much fun, and I love it. And
I mean, believe it or not, I do watch other kinds of movies. Just
I don't know when you
not as often.
I don't know when you find the time between between the scary movies and then the foreign like detective kind of stuff.
Those are usually my winter watches, though. The Nordic, detective thrillers.
Right,
I don't know why I watch those in the winter. I guess because it's cold on TV. And although they did have like two new seasons came out almost like back to back of Wisting, which is one of my favorite.
Wisting.
It's just called Wisting, and it'll mix between English and Norwegian just because sometimes they'll have American characters in the show sometimes.
Sure.
But they came out with like two seasons in a row of that, and that is one of my favorites. So I did watch those in warm weather, but normally I save those for winter. So
got it. I know you have some stuff coming up, but I did want to just say I had a great time this weekend.
At
Mineral Springs there. I got to lead a ghost tour there, or a ghost hunt. I'm sorry. And that was so much fun. I thought, of course, after the fact of, I wish I'd have said this, wish I'd have said that.
Oh yeah.
The reason I got to do that or even have that, kind of real time thought is because there were, two walking tours, a bus tour, a dinner, and the ghost hunt all converging
all at the same time.
At Mineral. Yeah. And it was so cool just to hear. I got to hear so many stories. I got to tell so many stories. I got to have Steve tell his story in the pool. I got to do your classic turn the lights off, open the door, drag your feet story.
Sure.
That was so much fun. I got some fun pictures that I'll probably have to, I'll talk to you about after the show, because one of them looks pretty creepy, but I don't want to die. It's no point diving into this picture
without,
anybody be able to see it. It was a lot of fun. So thank you again for letting me do that.
Yeah, and, sure thing. Man, and it was great to see you do it. I mean, and you were doing something we don't normally do,
Sure.
I mean, I wasn't with you. I saw you like in passing
right.
four times because I had my own stuff to deal with.
Right.
But it was still fun to see you there and taking part in it. It was cool.
So, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And I'll tell you the scariest thing though, that happened all night that you didn't give me any heads up about the pigeon that's downstairs.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't know.
There's apparently like a 10 pounder is what Steve called it. And hanging out when you're going to the sub basement through the ballroom, there's a pigeon that hangs out. And Rachel and I were going down there and she warned me about it. And then the thing, I didn't see it. I just hear it. And I hear her scream.
Yeah.
She grabs me, I think, to throw me in front of the pigeon.
In front of her. Yeah.
To, so you know, she to, could escape right. to safety,
right.
which I don't blame her.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the scariest thing that happened the entire time. But yeah, anyway, so aside from, geez, those five things that just converged, what else you got coming up?
Well, with Halloween, day after tomorrow, going to be wrapping up this season. And then we get into what I really call the spooky season, because as I've said a million times, in the olden days, Halloween was not the end of spooky season. It was the beginning of spooky season, mm-hmm. because the dead of winter is when things are really scary. I mean, that's the way it always used to be. But yeah, we've got a lot of things coming up for winter and spring. I've already posted on the website at dinnerandspirits.com. St. Louis Exorcism Dinners, The American Witch, A.J. Tomes, The Limp Family, Ghost Gangsters, Abraham Lincoln Cults, American Sideshows, all kinds of stuff. So we got a lot happening coming up over the winter time, not to mention Dead of Winter, which we'll talk more about later. But the after hour events for that, VIP package is almost full. A lot of the after hour things for Dead of Winter almost full. And that's February 1st. So that'll be coming up anytime soon. Faster than we think. Also, the tickets for the Haunted America conference will be going on sale at the beginning of January. And we'll have that full website up in the next week or so people can see everything that's going on this year. Plus just one more thing about Halloween, the American Oddities Museum will be open on Halloween, which is, wouldn't seem like that big of a deal, except it's a Thursday. We're not usually open on Thursdays. So we'll be open Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this weekend, 12 to 5. We are in Alton, Illinois. If you don't know that already, stop by and see us. It should be fun. So I'm looking forward to it. So, yeah.
Awesome. I want to give a quick shout out to our new subscribers on Patreon. So thank you very much for supporting the show, to Stella and Bonehead.
Yeah. I thought, Cody, you don't have to pay for Patreon. You should know this by now.
I know. It's just my default username. But thank you very much for supporting the show. Troy's been doing some great stuff on there. And
finished. Today was our final Ed Gein Texas Chainsaw episode was today. So it's going to be a little bit of time. I'm getting the next season together already. We'll make an announcement on that when it gets closer. I'm not telling anybody. Even Cody doesn't know.
I have no idea
what it's going to be about yet. So I am enthused about this. I've started to kind of do these seasons for Patreon, things I probably won't do a book about.
Ah, okay.
That's why I've been doing them. And in this particular case, it was just too gross. And the next season is going to be even wilder. So,
If you think the
Ed Gein season was weird, wait till you get a load of the next one. So anyway, that'll be coming up. So check out our Patreon. We really appreciate all of our supporters. We have a lot of fun over there. And you can see it at patreon.com/AmericanHauntings. So
that's great.
Yeah,
that's great.
It's been fun. So
this is just a way for you to scratch an itch, essentially.
It really is. I get to do something that it's different than what I'm working on currently. I mean, because I've got a list of things, of books that are coming that are somewhat insane, which I'm hoping to live long enough to get to all of them. But this is I like to use these Patreon shows as something a little different. So, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I look forward to whatever crazy stuff come up with next. I got a listener review. Wanted to give a shout out real quick. This was from Rooney711. And I just really like the title. It just says, from a fellow feral child. It says, I've been binging the podcast. I love it. The only thing I hate is I'm almost caught up and have to wait for new episodes. thank you for that review. As far as Ghostwriter stuff goes, since this is a kind of a non-traditional episode anyway, I don't have anything that somebody emailed in, but somebody did ask me on Saturday if I knew anything about the Lincoln Lofts in Alton. And I said, I don't. I said, this is more of like a Troy question or whatever. And I said, especially Lincoln in general. She's like, well, weird things that would happen around my apartment. And I was like,
what used to be. We covered that on the podcast. I just don't think we use that name, but that used to be the Franklin House where Lincoln had stayed when he was in town. town. So yeah, it has a long history of being haunted.
Got it. Okay. So
which I'm sure they probably would not like us to advertise, but whatever. I mean, yeah. Most people know it. It's pretty easy to look that one up. Tell them to buy a copy of Haunted Alton.
There you go. Mean, okay.
It's all in there. So
check out Haunted Alton. Cause all I could say was, okay, so what weird stuff, like what are their top hats just everywhere?
Right.
Like,
right. Like, yeah. Yeah. I keep seeing this really tall guy wandering around.
So oh yeah. So wow. Yeah, check out the book, check out the podcast, the deal at Franklin House. Okay, man. So how are we going to do this? This is a little bit different because we've asked for some listener feedback.
I did. And so, I thought that what I'll do is before we get to our suspense versus horror thing, which I kind of wanted to kick things off with, and I've got several texts about that, but I thought I would go ahead and kind of clean off some of our texts from the haunt line before we get to that.
Okay, yeah.
Because I've got a few here, and then we've been doing a show every week during October, but then we'll go back to our regular schedule, and then we'll have way too many again,
right?
And I won't be able to, you know, to handle them all. So anyway, so I thought I would just kind of read a couple of the other ones that are not, you know, part of what we're doing today. So this one comes from the 936, and it says, hello, first off, I love the podcast. First found you while looking for a podcast to listen to on my drive between Texas and Louisiana. The first one I listened to was the Bobby Dunbar episode, and I was hooked after that. This was back during our disappearances season.
Yep.
I've listened to all the seasons except season one and recommend it to everyone because we told them not to.
Yes.
Everyone who's had an interest in haunted history. I live in Natchitoches, Louisiana, which is the oldest settlement in Louisiana. It was settled in 1714. I love the season about New Orleans. I've been there too many times to count, and I've been to the Lollerie House, and the episode about it was one of my favorites. My question is, did the actual house burn the night the atrocities were discovered, and is that the one that's there now, rebuilt following the fire? Keep up the good work. Can't wait to see what you have in store for us next. No, that is the original house. That fire was not a burn the whole house down kind of fire. It was a small fire that started in the kitchen, and the theory was that the cook, who was chained to the stove, had set the place on fire.
Right.
And so it was actually just kind of a small fire. As it turned out, the firefighters were there fairly quickly, and while trying to get things out of the houses, when they discovered the place in the attic where Madame Lollerie was keeping some of her slaves. And of course, you listen to the episode, you know that a lot of that was blown completely out of proportion as far as the tortures inflicted on the slaves. It was bad enough, but somebody felt the need to make it worse. But yeah, anyway, we'll check that out. If you checked out the episode, and I'm sorry we weren't clear enough on that, but it's not a rebuild house. That's the original that's sitting there. So this one is from the 606. Good morning from Kentucky. I've been hooked on Troy's book since I found an autographed copy of Haunted New Orleans at a tiny bookstore in Mattoon. That means someone got a signed copy of the book and hated it, so they gave it away and they found it in a secondhand store.
I love it.
I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm glad that you found it. I'm glad that you enjoyed it. So love the podcast since day one. Keep up the fantastic work. And this is the part that got my attention. Mm-hmm. I'll bring you a bourbon in a real jar of shine when I get up to the museum before the end of the year. So 606, I will be counting the days. Text me ahead of time. Let me know you're coming. I will definitely stop by in person for that.
That's awesome.
So, okay. Now let's see. All right. So this one is from Eddie in the 678. Says, hey, fellas, what's up? Troy, I've been reading your book, The Haunting of America. It's been super great. Eastern State's one of my all-time favorites. I work for, that's the penitentiary in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I work for my local library system. I've been trying to convince them to purchase your books. So thanks. Appreciate
that's
it.
That's
great. Let's see. I'm trying to skip the suspense ones. Okay, that's a suspense one. Okay, this is... Oh, this one's funny. All right. So this comes to Bryce or from Bryce from the 480. Says, hey, guys, Bryce here again from Thunderbird Country. Still on the other side of the fence, but still don't care because I'm still enjoying a free show. Firstly, and most importantly, condolences to Cody. Hope he's doing well, all things considered. Importantly now, I know you probably get a ton of suggestions about what future seasons should cover, and I want to throw another your way. The longer I live here in the Dirty T, that's Tucson, if you didn't know, the more I learn just how haunted the Southwest is. The Hotel Congress here in Tucson, for example, is apparently very haunted. It's also the spot where John Dillinger was arrested and brought back to Indiana to stand trial for a crime he didn't commit. But it didn't matter because he escaped anyway. And of course, you have the Birdcage Theater in Tombstone Mines in Bisbee. It's Arizona. I thought it might be cool to cover the hauntings throughout in all of the old Wild West. That would be more than a season, but we might someday be able to kind of cut that into pieces.
Yeah,
I do have a book that I am slowly working on about that region as well. But anyway, whatever you end up doing, I'll be listening, hoping to make it to an Alton event one of these days. If you're ever in Tucson, let's grab a drink at the Hotel Congress. I do hope to be back out that way at some point in the near future. Looking forward to a certain episode that he's guessing will be the finale. But Bryce, I hate to tell you, you're wrong. On this one, that particular thing that you mentioned, you're the only one that knows what I'm talking about, will not be in this season for one very good reason. And if you text me and want to know what that reason is, I will answer your text. But I'm not going to tell anyone else. Only Bryce is going to get to know. So anyway, curious to see if my thoughts regarding the last one match my own. So yeah, he can text me back. So
look at that.
So cheers, guys. So yeah, that was from Bryce. Let's see. So like I said, trying to not do the this is hey morning, enjoy the show. This is from the 618, so that's home territory for us here. I've been listening since season one. I've listened to the rise and fall of Pacer Smith, and you mentioned a movie. Well, somebody mentioned a movie in a text they sent called Lake Mungo. I'm going to check it out. Can't wait for the movie special. That was that's a found footage movie that I find exceptional.
I think it's great. Good.
And I always highly recommend it to anybody who digs, you know, anything like, even if you don't like found footage, I'd seriously think that you would enjoy this movie. It's so good. Let's see. Sorry, trying to, you know, get through the.
No, all good.
I mess it up here with the wrong, read the wrong ones. Okay, that's another one. That's another one. This is another one. It just has a funny ending to it that says, thank you for making my tech support job immensely more fun. I appreciate you guys hanging out with me at work. See, that's one that's, you know, safe.
Yes.
And because we were worried about some of these being unsafe jobs for people to be listening to the podcast.
A forklift while working driver on it. Or something.
Yes, things like that. So, yeah. And then I've got some more because we're going to use those when we weigh into our next episode. So, guys, thanks for sending those in. If you are curious or want to send us, have a question, want to send us a text, want to ask something, want to contribute something to the show, you could text us on the haunt line. That's 217-791-7859. And, you know, we may read it on the show, or it just may be secret messages between us, as I have with Bryce. So
I was going to say, are you replacing me with Bryce?
No, we're just we're just discussing aspects of the show. So,
okay.
You already know what it is because I told you. You just don't remember what it is, and I told you the reason for it. We can talk about it later.
Okay. Gosh. Okay. Now I feel so much better. It would have been bugging me the entire episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So you ready to get going on this?
I'm ready when you are.
All right. So let's talk about this suspense versus horror thing. I've had a lot of people weigh in on it, and I think that we can kind of weigh in as we go with some of the things they said. But that was something that we wanted to discuss with you guys. How do you feel about the difference between what's suspense and what's horror? Because there are a lot of things that you know, the directors or award categories or whatever will fail to acknowledge them as being horror films. One of the big ones is Silence of the Lambs. Mm-hmm. Everybody's been saying that for years, that, you know, it is a horror film. And I would agree with that. But on the other hand, I'll look at something like What Lies Beneath. Remember that movie with Harrison Ford?
Yeah.
That's got a ghost in it, but I would call it a horror film. I call that a suspense film because it's not horrific, even though usually I would say, well, it's got supernatural elements. It's a horror film. So I'm going to be controversial and say that doesn't seem like a horror film. And it hardly ever gets lumped in with horror films for whatever reason. And I don't know if it's because it came out in that time period when everybody was embarrassed about horror films, because that's what happened with Silence of the Lambs. Nobody wanted to call it a horror film because that in the early 90s, nobody wanted to say that because we were still coming off the slasher era in the late 80s. And so people were like, oh, God, no, that's not a horror film. That's, you know, we don't want to say that because everybody will think it's, you know, a guy in a hockey mask.
Right.
You know, so I think there's lots of ways to go with this.
Well, it's interesting. Something that you said that I had never even, I don't know why, but just you saying horrific, I was like, oh, yeah, OK, that's just, you know, what turned into an adjective or something is a great way to think about it, because Silence of the Lambs, some horrific things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that maybe that's part of it. I think you and I got into this initially. Well, gosh, I can't tell you how many times we argued about it. But I remember the big one was Parasite, I think.
Oh, God, I hate that movie. It's not a horror film. That is not, it's not even suspenseful. I never understood that. I know. And I never could wrap my head around it. And that was just me.
Yeah. You know? And I think that's how maybe how we initially started arguing.
I think it was, too, because I didn't get it. Why it kept getting listed as a horror film. And you're like, but, you know, and I'm like, yes. Yeah, I don't get it. So I don't know. I and there are other things that pop up that way, too. I mean, it's not that those are not alone.
Right.
And I really started to think that there's no way to define this.
Sure.
That it's always going to be in the eye of the beholder.
Right.
You know, as to, well, it's kind of like, you know, the whole porn question.
Right.
Well, I'll know porn when I see it. And I think that maybe that's the same way with horror. You know, I'll know it when I see it. But let's see what some of our listeners have.
Please, because we'll just go round and round about
yes,
this.
Yes, yes. Well. Oh, I agree. I want to hear what they have to say, too. So this one is from Wendy from California in the 707. And she says, the difference between horror and suspense to me, and that's a good way to phrase it, horror pretty much always has a suspense factor. You're generally on the edge of your seat when watching horror because it's scary and you're anxious about what's going to happen. Anxious in a fun way, hopefully. On the contrary, for a movie to be considered suspense, it's lacking the horror element. A movie can be gripping and you can still have that edge of your seat feeling without the fright factor. The stakes are high for the characters in suspense film, but they're usually lacking scary stuff. And by scary stuff, I mean supernatural, twisted serial killer slasher types, or a combination of those. Hope that makes sense. And then she has an add-on and she says, I think that if it's the twisted serial killer type of film to be horror, it also should have an overall dark tone throughout, little to no humor or lightheartedness. And it should probably focus on the twisted nature of the killer. That's fair. But yeah. I mean, I don't think it's, I think that we're kind of feeling the same way. So, I mean, it's again, it's impossible to put your finger on.
I know.
And I think she tried. And you know, I think everybody here that sent me something tried. I'm just not sure that they can do it any better than we can.
Because
I don't know what to say either.
You know what? So,
Go ahead.
It got me thinking of a rewatch I did not too long ago of like Ready or Not. There is some humor and the stakes are super high.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And
there is a supernatural element.
Right.
Yeah. Well, toward the end.
Yeah.
We don't know all that till the very end. But
yeah,
we always just think they're nuts.
Exactly. And I still don't know where to.
How I know. Place Do, is it? I mean, is it a horror film? I mean, it's categorized that way. But is it one? I just watched Azrael. Speaking of Samara Weaving.
Okay.
I just watched that. It that's definitely not a horror film. Although it has horrific elements, it's still a suspense movie. Ready or Not has supernatural elements, but would I call it suspense? Would I call it suspense or would I call it horror?
I don't know.
How about here's another one. How about You're Next?
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
It gets categorized as a horror film, but is it?
And, you know, the scariest thing I can think of, I've said, is pretty like home invasion stuff is like the scariest stuff.
The Strangers.
So for Your Next or The Strangers, like, yeah, that's the scariest and most horrific thing in my mind. But still, I would have trouble classifying.
Yeah, we call them horror films, but it's kind of like, well, it's like Silence of the Lambs. Is it?
Yeah.
I mean, I think so. But is it? I don't know. Can I define it? No, but is it in my, do I shelve them with my horror films in my Blu-ray collection? Yes. But is it a horror film? I don't know.
I can't think of a better way for us.
Is The Thing a horror film or is it science fiction?
That's another great genre.
Because Alien is definitely a horror film.
It has to be.
Even though it's a science fiction film, it's definitely a horror film because it is, as it's always described, a haunted house in space. But
right.
Alien's a horror film? No.
No.
It's an action sci-fi movie.
Yeah. Yes. I can't think of a better way for us to waste time on a Tuesday morning.
There's just no way to do this, right? So, okay. So this one's ridiculous. This is from Renee, our friend Renee Cruz.
Yeah.
And then she says suspense versus horror. And she said she uses an example put forth by Alfred Hitchcock.
Okay.
All right. So suspense. Two men sitting at a table playing cards and chatting. Under the table, we see a bomb with the timer ticking closer and closer to zero. But the men continue to sit there talking. The audience is yelling, run, there's a bomb under the table. Okay. Horror. The bomb explodes and the men are torn to pieces with body parts flying around the room. The body parts become reanimated and move together trying to reassemble, but instead they reattach in a mismatched manner, forming a single monster. The monster lurches through the door, screaming an unearthly sound as it leaves the room to chase the people trying to escape the building, leaving a trail of gore behind it. So that was Renee's example.
Thanks, Renee.
Which, I mean, is what we're saying. I think it's pretty much what we're trying to get across here. I don't have an answer to this is the problem. So let's see. Let's see if Jess in the 586 has something that we can work on. So listening to the last episode, I want to throw my opinion at the horror versus suspense movie category debate. I don't think it's a which is it as much as how much horror slash suspense is in the movie. I've always looked at them as a Venn diagram. The overlap between the two is huge, especially when you consider the movies labeled as suspense or thrillers because horror has so many connotations to it. Movies like Identity, What Lies Beneath, there you go, Hide and Seek, may not always be classified as horror, but they are definitely horror suspense to me. I agree with Troy. Suspense was used at the time that horror was just slashers and camp. That's what we were saying about Silence of the Lambs. Yeah. Now that horror is matured and the audience from them is matured, I think the overlap is huge. And then she says also, thanks for making my tech job immensely entertaining.
Oh. Hide and Seek, by the way. Love Hide and Seek. A great one.
I just rewatched that recently.
I did too.
I hadn't seen it in a really long time and it popped up somewhere as like a suggested thing. And I thought, you know, I haven't watched that in a while. So I watched it. For some reason, I also watched, I think it was maybe like a De Niro horror movies. Does De Niro make horror movies? Well, Angel Heart, where he plays Satan himself. And then Hide and Seek. And then there was another one and I can't think of the name of it now, but it has Greg Kinnear in it and Rebecca Romijn in it. And they're like trying to have a baby. And it's like there's some kind of he's like a mad scientist at this fertility clinic. And it's also a suspense film. I wouldn't call it horror, but it kind of came out with this De Niro horror movie kind of thing.
Interesting.
But I can't remember the name of it now. If there was only a way to look it up. But I got four screens in my hand right now. Give me a break. So, all right. So here's another one. And this comes from Stephanie it says, hey, Troy and Cody, area code may be 217, but I'm living in the 520. So I get that. Mine's always 217, no matter where I live. So anyway, I think the difference between horror and suspense can sometimes be the gore factor. Mm-hmm. The bloodier, the more it leans to the horror side. However, I think the psychological suspense leans more on the horror side, at least for me. So hope that helps. It doesn't help. but
it's not your fault.
Differences forever. So she understands. So thank you for all you do. Been listening to the podcast since day one. Unfortunately, that doesn't really help either. I don't think there's any way to help this discussion. And we'll probably get some more emails or text messages about it at some point. I also know that I lost at least one because I try to keep this thing cleaned off so I don't repeat them. And I think I accidentally deleted one that I was saving. So if I didn't read yours, I apologize. I meant to, but it disappeared and I don't know how to fix that. there's probably a way, but I don't know what it is. But if I can figure it out, I'll find it. And we may get more. because they're going to go, Jesus, you guys are idiots, which we are. Yes. And we have no way to make this some final word on the subject. There just isn't, because we've sat here already and named like 22 films that can go either way.
It just makes it more
considered
confusing.
Horror that are suspense and considered suspense that are horror. I don't know, man. I think it's always going to be to each his own. It's going to be in the eye of the beholder. I really think that's going to be it. And so we can argue about it all day long, you know, about what gets categorized as horror. I mean, would you call the, you know, I don't know what I'd call them. What would you call these, like, the Monarch films that have been coming out, the Godzilla and King Kong? It's Adam Wingard who did You're Next. So do we call that a horror film? Is that a suspense? So what are those? Are they sci-fi? I mean, because honestly, the only one I've ever seen that I think is really even close to horror, it was Skull Island, only because there's some really scary monsters in
there. But
on the other hand, we look at like the originals, the classic King Kong and the classic Godzilla, we consider those horror.
Yeah.
Why? But I don't consider the Peter Jackson King Kong horror.
So sometimes it's shifted.
I don't know what happened there. I mean, mm-hmm. we look at that as like an early, you know, that's an early example of horror. When you look around my office and you look at all these classic horror films that I've got hanging up, it's, you know, it's Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein and Dracula mm-hmm. and the Wolfman and the Creature from the Black Lagoon and fucking King Kong. I mean, yeah. Is it a horror film? I don't know. I mean, was it scary when I was a kid? Some of it was, I guess.
Sure.
But, you know, they would show it. See, here's how I define classic horror films, and this kind of messed up. But when I was a really young kid, there was a show called the early show, and it was at 3 o'clock every afternoon. And so I always knew when it was getting ready to start because my mom would watch The Edge of Night, this soap opera.
Okay.
And it ended at 3. And then when you hear the music for The Edge of Night, that meant that the early show was getting ready to start. And every once in a while, they would have like classic horror movie week. And it would always be Dracula, Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, Wolfman, Creature from the Black Lagoon. And sometimes they would slip in and take out Bride and put in The Mummy instead. Or they'd slip out one and put in King Kong. So yeah. To me, it was always a horror film. But I don't know that it is. I mean, I guess I would call it sci-fi fantasy, maybe. I don't know.
Those
giant monster movies, what are they? I mean, you know, even going back to, you know, the Beast from 20,000 Fathoms and things, it's, you know, giant monsters wreaking havoc, but we always called them horror films. Look at a horror film book about classic horror films. You find all that stuff in there. I mean, the original Thing is definitely not a horror film. I mean, it's James Arnaz is a giant vegetable walking around, you know, and getting electrocuted in the Antarctic, you know, station. But
right.
But the Kurt Russell one, that's a horror film.
And it has to be. Yeah.
But is it? Yes.
Technically,
is it? I don't know. Is it sci-fi? You know, it's like Alien.
The episode that breaks us.
I know it might be. We got to stop. Let's get into some of our other stuff that we wanted to do.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to mention, you know, we come at the end of the year. I always hit you with my list of what I always call my favorite horror films of the year.
Right.
And we don't always agree. You know, we don't always agree on those. Some of them you're like, really, dude? And other times you're like, well, what about this? And I'm like, it was okay.
Yeah.
But I usually spend a lot of time hating on films, but mm-hmm. I'd rather not do the negative thing for that episode. I just want it to be the good stuff. So I'm going to bring out the negative stuff for this one. So my year so far, my skinamarinks for the year so far, uh-huh. as I like to call it.
Okay.
Which is a film that I will continue to hate. These are this year's Mandy's.
No, actually, there you go.
Actually, I'm not sure. Oh, there's only a couple of these I hate that much.
Yeah.
There isn't much that I hate as much as Mandy and Skinamarink. Those are the worst. I mean, they're always going to be the worst. And I'll never get past them. I will never try and rewatch Skinamarink because it's not going to get any better.
Yeah.
Now I did try and rewatch Mandy. Mm-hmm. Still no better.
I like the idea of calling the things we don't like the Mandy's, almost like the Razzies or something.
Yeah, it is. You know? It is like, kind of. Yeah, you know what? That's a good idea. So these are not. I don't hate all of these, but we're very disappointed for one reason or another. And the first one that I put on my list was Never Let Go. Did you see that?
Nope.
Halle Berry movie about the kids in the woods.
Nope.
Wow. Talk about a disappointment.
That's why I didn't watch it. That's what I
heard. Yeah, I thought it looked good when I saw the trailers. But yeah, it is not. It just isn't. So I'm telling you this, if you have not seen it and you see it pop up on your say your Amazon Prime or your whatever, and you see it pop up and you can buy it or rent it, don't. Just don't wait till it's free. If you decide I really want to see it. Hey, listen, I like Halle Berry and the kids were great actors in it. Mm-hmm. It's just the movie sucked. It just sucked. I mean, you'll just have to watch it to see. But another one that was just a disappointment to me was In a Violent Nature. Did you see this one?
No.
Did
so watch that one, I've only seen one on your list and you know which one it is. So I was going to ask you actually to wait.
Well, I'm saving that for the end.
Yeah.
But okay, that's why I would skip to In a Violent Nature next.
Perfect. Perfect.
That was the one that was this, you know, the premise is that you're seeing this film has very little dialogue and has some, but it's mostly seen through the eyes of the killer,
which seemed interesting.
Reanimated corpse who comes to commit a murder because somebody moves this necklace that was part of the origin story of this kind of urban legend type thing.
Okay.
It just, I wanted it to be cool because I thought it was an original idea.
Yeah.
But it just, it's just not. I was just disappointed in it. And I know a lot of people have really liked it. It just wasn't for me. And, you know, this is my opinions here, guys. I'm not an expert by any means. I just watch a lot of this stuff. And so I know a lot of things and I get drunk and know things. Isn't that what Tyrion Lannister always said? And that's pretty much what I get to with this stuff. But I did not like this movie. And if somebody did like it, tell me why I'm wrong. Seriously, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong. Well, with any of these, because Lisa Frankenstein was one that I wanted to watch, that I wanted to like. I really did. I thought it looked funny. I always liked Diablo Cody, who wrote it. Mm-hmm. I thought that I've always thought she's very talented.
Absolutely.
The girl that's in it, I'm a big fan of. I really like her. Catherine Newton. She's great. That was the main reason I wanted to see it. I think she's good and whatever. Remember when she did that? She did that movie with what's the dude? Big tall dude from Swingers. Vince Vaughn. Where she the serial killer thing where they change personalities.
Yes,
I love that movie. That's hilarious, and I thought this would be too. It's not. It has some funny moments.
Yeah,
but this is a movie that I think I left there going, if I was a 13-year-old girl, I would have liked this.
Right.
It's kind of how I felt the time I'm like, why are people watching Twilight movies? Uh-huh. Okay, I'll watch one and see. I watched the first one and I thought, this is trash. But if I was a 13-year-old girl, I would like this.
Yeah.
You know, now I get it. Now I understand.
There you go.
And I think that this probably would appeal to 13-year-old girls, but it did not appeal to me. I was very disappointed when I left the theater and, I just was. I'm sorry I was, but I was. And so it didn't work for me. So the last one or second to last one on my list was one I just watched recently called Bagman. Now, that is not to be confused with Baghead, which came out earlier this year, which I actually did like. That one I like better. This one, basically, this is about a supernatural being that steals kids and stuffs them in a bag. But it has some interesting ideas because the villain is pretty scary, especially from a kid's point of view.
Yeah.
It had some good stuff to it, but it probably has one of the most unsatisfying endings I've ever seen since. What was that Possession movie? The found footage one. Remember where it ends with you want to see what happens next, go to this website. Do you remember that?
No.
It was like, God, I cannot remember what it was called, but it was an exorcism movie about this, and it was about a nun and somebody gets possessed, and it's really not bad.
Yeah.
But it ends with like a car crash, and then the ending comes up and says, go to this website. Yeah, it's really garbage. But
I would lose
this was a movie where they so obviously wanted to make a sequel to this movie. It kind of ends that way where there could be a sequel, but I'm thinking I would not spend my money to make another one of these. It just wasn't worth it. So that kind of fit into the disappointment. So none of these were hate movies. I saved that for one. Well, here's the reason why. I don't have a lot of hate movies. I'll have a lot I'm disappointed by, because I watch the trailers for everything. And if I watch the trailer and within 15 seconds, if there's somebody who can't act or it looks like it was made in someone's garage, I'm not going to waste my time on it. You know, there's a lot of movies I'll start and I'll get 15 minutes in and I'm like, okay, this is utter garbage.
Right.
Turn it off. I'm not going to put that on a list. I'm just not. Although I did watch a movie last night that I did not include on this list because it was too late. This is my entire review for a film called Spin the Bottle. This is my review. I'm pretty sure that Justin Long, Ali Larter, and Tony Amendola owed someone money.
That's
the review. Yeah, that was it. I made it all the way through. So I won't write a review if I don't make it all the way through. I made it all the way through, but it was like being tortured. It was like being in a dental chair the entire time. And I thought, well, I'd like to see what happens. And I know it's going to be lame.
Right.
And then sure enough, not only was it lame, but they had a super lame ending where, ooh, it looks like it's going to happen again. You know, one of those, you know, and I think that is one of the biggest cliched tropes ever. And I hate it. But anyway, so I was disappointed. I think I hate watched it for the most part.
Yeah.
Hate it, but it's pretty bad. It got a higher rating than the next film we did. I gave that one 2 stars. The one that I really want to talk about, the movie I hated so much, I gave it a 0.5 star just so I could still review it because I couldn't review it otherwise.
Yes.
And that was The Deliverance. Now, not to be confused with Deliverance, the classic 1970s Burt Reynolds, John Voight movie that I still contend is a horror film. It's not that movie. It's The Deliverance, which is very loosely based on the Indiana Demon House story, which is a load of crap and was turned into an even bigger load of crap when someone who will not be named decided to make a documentary about it. And it's 200 demons that lived in the house. And someday after I've had a drink or so, this is out to the audience, Cody's already heard it. You should get with me and hear my review of the museum that is the property of the person who made the documentary. And let me tell you about this particular room where the staircase from that house is sitting. And it's a good story. Anyway, I mean, to the point that I got my entire tour group to rebel. Anyway, The Deliverance is...
it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
It is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. How this happened.
Well, as far as it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen, that had a budget, that had it had resources. Yeah. You know
did.
What I mean?
Yeah. It did. It had a director, Lee Daniels, who's made some good films. I don't know how this happened. I don't know how Glenn Close ended up in this film playing this.
I was like,
oh my God, I don't even know where to go with this. Cannot imagine how you would sit on a set with an entire black cast and play this character.
Yeah,
I just don't understand. But this was absolutely not only the worst horror film I think I've ever seen, it was one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and again, I got fooled by talent in front of and behind the camera. I just don't understand it. I don't know who paid for it. I don't. How did anyone see this? And how did Netflix Because well, they had to have paid a good amount of money for this.
Yeah, Netflix pushed it for like at least that weekend, I think, or week.
Oh, yeah, you and that I, quickly when
you
ended.
And I, yeah, when you and I were both duped into watching it. And I think, I don't know how it all happened. It made me, Glenn Close stuff made me very uncomfortable right from the beginning.
Yeah, I just don't even understand it. I just, I don't know. If you guys have seen this film, you've got to understand what we're talking about. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, you know what? I told everybody, don't bother with some of this stuff. Bother. Go watch this and give us your thoughts, because this is the worst film it's so bad. I don't even know where to start. It's so bad. And I'm just baffled as to how this thing got made in the first place.
Yeah, there's got to be an interesting story. I know.
I just can't figure it out. Other than maybe... I don't know, though. They spent so much money and were in so deep, they didn't know what else to do but release it. That's the only thing I can think of. I got nothing here. I got nothing. I don't understand how it happened, but it's so bad. So there's that. I don't know what else to say.
I should have looked it up to see if there's any stuff out about how did this get made sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, but. I know. It's just it's unreal. And so this may not be the last time we talk about it, depending on what our listeners have to say about it. So anyway,
did you say something like deliver me from this movie or something?
I did not. I think someone has. I felt like I needed an exorcism after watching it. But other than that. Yeah, it's just horrible. All right. So we also decided, well, I decided unilaterally. Yes. After I watched the new remake of Salem's Lot, I couldn't help but, you know, as I was watching it, make some comparisons between the two.
Yes.
And so I'd like to go over what I had to say about it as I was watching it, and because I was really keeping, I usually don't write things this long, but I wanted to talk about the differences and the comparisons really between some of the other Stephen King remakes. Mm-hmm. So Salem's Lot's what I wanted to start with, and I'll just kind of tell you what I had to say about it.
I
this is kind of what I wrote. Salem's Lot was one of the first Stephen King books I've ever read. So I've always loved it. I've read the book probably a half dozen times. I don't usually love all the Stephen King adaptations, but I didn't want to spend my entire review talking about casting choices in the various versions, but I have to do it a little bit.
Yeah.
So first off, I hate the original 1977 TV miniseries. I don't like it. I didn't like it when I saw it. It has some high points. Mm-hmm. James Mason is great in it. Bonnie Bedelia is in it in 1977. I thought she was really cute. The only thing I really think is worth a damn is that Danny Glick outside of Mark's window. That scared me when I was a kid. That's a great scene. And I think that's why so many people think they love it, because they remember that. But if you rewatch it now, it's guaranteed to disappoint, at least me. And of course, then there's the Barlow, you know, or the vampire. Mm-hmm. In the 1977 miniseries, he's just a ripoff of Count Orlok in Nosferatu from 1922. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not what he's supposed to be like. He plays it like a giant rat. So I'm not into it. In the books, Barlow is supposed to be a sophisticated kind of urbane guy who is able to turn people into vampires because they want to be a vampire. If you saw that thing coming toward you, you would not want to be a vampire.
Right.
Now, in the 2006 miniseries, Rutger Hauer plays him, and I thought he was great. He's the way he is in the book. He's appealing. He's manipulative. He's a sinister character. He's not a bald rat.
Right.
Which is what he is in 77. But then there's some of the other casting. Now, in the 2006 version, I should also mention that. So 1999, there was a miniseries done. I believe it was on ABC. That's what we're talking about when I say 77. There's a 2006 version that was done on TNT. It's a two-nighter, and it stars Rob Lowe, who my complaint about him is he's too pretty.
Right.
I like Rob Lowe. He's a great actor, but he's not Glenn Mears. or Ben Mears, Jesus, Glenn. But I did think, I did like Lewis Pullman, who is in this 2024 version. He's a little goofier, little more Ben Mears for me. In Richard Straker, who played James Mason, you know, the guy that plays him in this new one, and his name is Pilo Asbeck, who he played Theon Greyjoy in Game of Thrones. That's what I know him from. He might have been good. I have no idea because he's only in like two scenes.
Right.
Because they, well, we'll get to that. I take Donald Sutherland from the 2006 one. Donald Sutherland was great in that. And Father Callahan, that character, it, that's not even close. The 2006 version is James Cromwell. Always going to be the best. You could put him in anything. He's always going to be the best. Matt Burke, I'm a little tight on this. How do you love Andrew Brower? Andre Brower played him in the 2006 one, the late, great Andre Brower. He was great. And I thought he was good. Bill Camp, who plays him in this one, I like him. Again, he's not given enough time to be anything, but he's the guy that plays the attorney in The Outsider, which this would have made a great, they should have done this as a series, not a movie, but he plays the outsider, plays the attorney, eventually becomes a believer. I love that guy. I think he's a great actor and I really like him.
I like The Outsider too, just in general.
Me too. And Mike Ryerson is played by Spencer Treat Clark, who I like. I watch Stephen King actor William Sadler in pretty much anything. You know, he's from Shawshank Redemption. He plays the sheriff in this one. He's the guy who reads, what's this book? The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexandre Dumas. He's always great. And then change it up, Dr. Cody, especially with Alfred Woodard. Alfred Woodard was great, but I had a tough time at first with Mark Petrie, mostly because I'm all about changing the race of characters. This one was weird because in the beginning of the book, people mistake Ben Mears and Mark Petrie for father and son, and you can't really do that in this one.
Right.
But I thought the kid did a great job. Jordan Preston Clark is his name. I think he got off to a rough start, but he got better as it went, better than the kid in 2006, because that Mark is too old and too much of a smart ass. But that's also 2006, so you kind of asked for that back then. Samantha Mathis in 2006, this Susan again, given no time. So the positives about this version in 2024 was that it has a 1970s setting, which is good. No cell phones. You know how I feel about that.
Right. Which made
it better than the 2006 one. It looks great. Camera work is great. The acting is great. I was glad they got rid of the Dud Rogers character because that's really painful. The hunchback kind of weird, you know, guy in the 2006 one, that needed to go. Danny Glick at the window scene, pretty great. Marjorie Glick scene, I thought was really great in this one, in the funeral home. But the negatives are, this thing is way too short. Even though it's 2 hours long, it's still too short. It's a huge book, so they couldn't tell the whole story. So everything had to move fast to fit into an hour and 53 minutes. The hard part for me was that when Matt and everyone else just jumps right on the vampires in town bandwagon. Yeah, right. Are you kidding me? Nobody, you really believe this? Yeah, I mean, no, I would not.
Nobody push back. Yeah.
And then they immediately suspect, oh, it must be the two new guys in town. It's like, what happened here? I know they didn't have any time to waste, but man, I mean, that was whiplash. Plus, the Barlow doesn't look like Count Orlok. He looks more like somebody from 30 Days of Night, but even so, he's still not the right kind of character. I love some of the character changes, but there were a lot of people missing or not fleshed out at all, like Eva and Weasel and a whole lot of other people. We see them like in a brief second and you're like, oh, so they put them in there just so we can say they're in the movie, but they didn't do anything. So in general, I mean, I like this. Okay. It wasn't terrific, but it was watchable, better than a lot of other crap I've seen that they didn't leave on the shelf for 2 years. But this movie just abandons everything you know about the book and it becomes something all its own, which, I mean, isn't necessarily fun. I mean, there's a wacky finale that I did really like. But I think the big drawback to this was that there was just no time to do anything at all. And so everything just felt rushed. So if you ask me, what are you going to watch? Am I going to watch this again sometime? Maybe. Maybe I'll watch it with lowered expectations and like it better. Yeah. And I've done that with a lot of things. You know, I'll go back to it later and go, oh, you know what? I liked it better the second time around. Maybe I'll like it just because I'm not hoping for something fantastic. And I have watched the 2006 miniseries a number of times because it has some good stuff in it. But, you know, I don't know. It was all over the place, I thought. You know what I mean?
So, yeah. I think it just kind of showcases that because I don't have the same connections to it that you do. I thought the 2 hour runtime or hour 53 minutes was fine. But I think it just shows that a lot of Stephen King stuff, if you're going to do it, then it probably merits a miniseries.
Yeah. Well, I also guarantee there's another hour sitting around somewhere.
Probably. Yeah.
Maybe the cutting room we'll see floor. Someday because, I mean, that's what happened with Dr. Sleep.
Yeah.
It came out and I'm like, it was okay, but I feel like something was missing. Well, there was like a fucking another 50 minutes. And then when Flanagan put that back in and then we got to see it, I'm like, Jesus, this is one of the best Stephen King adaptations ever. He got rid of some of the crap in the book that didn't work. And don't get me wrong, love Stephen King, but there were some things in the book that I went, God, you know, and then, you know, so, I mean, that's something that I kind of added that on as kind of something to do with The Shining, because we're going to talk about that in a minute. But it's not really because it's not a remake of any kind. But he managed to take the 1980 Shining film and then took the book and managed to mix them together to make it work with Dr. Sleep. And I thought that that was the way to go. And even Stephen King liked it. It's kind of like when he watched The Mist. He kind of left the theater better. Going, damn it, I wish I would have thought of that, you know, because it does have a better ending. You know, it's the most bleak ending in history of film. But
devastating.
It's a great ending, much better than the story, for sure.
Do you want to skip ahead and reorder, just go into The Shining stuff since you're already...
We could talk about The Shining. The 1980 film. I mean, it's a classic. It is. I disliked it for a very long time.
Really?
Only because it's nothing like the book. And that's all we had. You know, that's all we had to go by, is that we had this, you know, this thing that Kubrick did. And I've always said, you know, Kubrick's a genius. There's a lot of things in that film that were groundbreaking, like the POV of the kid on the three-wheeler. Big wheel going through the hotel. Some great stuff in that. But there are so many things with it that I don't like. I don't like the fact that you never get the idea that Jack becomes crazy because of the hotel. In like the initial scenes where he's sitting in the office, there's no way I would have hired that guy to watch my hotel for the winter. There's no way. He is a lunatic.
You're right.
In the office, you already think, well, this guy's nuts. This isn't going to take long. You know, and the fact that, you know, that we've got, you know, one of the best characters in the history of film, played by Scatman Crothers, who gets the signal from Danny. Well, he's down in Florida. Danny calls out to him for help. Dick makes us, you know, this journey across the country and has to get up to the Overlook in the snow. And he's this arduous trip he's made, and he walks in the door and gets axed in the chest.
Yeah.
That is not how it's supposed to happen. That is not in the book. And I don't understand why that was a choice, but it was. So I have a lot to bitch about when it comes to the 1980 film, but on the other hand, it looks beautiful and it's a classic as long as you can ignore, you know, and know that this is a Kubrick film, not a Stephen King film.
Right.
But on the other hand,
Stephen King, he wasn't happy.
He hated it for a long time. He eventually, there were things like he couldn't say anything about it. He like signed some kind of thing and he couldn't talk about it until like after Kubrick was dead or something. I don't know what the story was exactly behind it, but eventually he could. What he always said was that it was a beautiful car with no engine in it. That's what he said about Kubrick's film, that it was too cold.
Interesting. I have seen some things.
That's a Kubrick film.
You know? I've seen some fun things lately about kind of like behind the scenes footage and things like that of like Jack Nicholson getting ready with the axe to like bust down the door and stuff, and just him preparing and kind of going crazy while they're setting stuff up. And it's really interesting seeing him get into that character. There's some cool behind the scenes stuff. So definitely seen that movie a ton.
Yeah. But it did bring us some iconic stuff.
Yeah.
From the pattern to the carpet, to the band, to, I mean, to the barroom, to the Grady twins. I mean, they're mentioned in the book, but not like this. I mean, that has become an iconic thing. And even when I didn't like the book, I still had, you know, figures of the Grady twins and things. I mean, you know, even, I mean, when I didn't like the film, I mean, so it gave us some iconic stuff. So it's not all bad. I mean, at all, but I mean, have you seen the miniseries that was done in 97?
That's what I was going to say. I've seen the movie. I've seen Dr. Sleep a few times.
It's not always easy to find. It just recently was put back out, I believe, as a Blu-ray, and I own it. I've watched it. I mean, it has its moments, and Stephen King did write it, but he wrote the screenplay for it. Mick Garris directed it. They filmed it at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, which was the inspiration for the Overlook. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there is a lot of good things about it, but it also is very 90s. And the other thing about it is, you know, they wanted to make sure that they had, you know, the right the characters who could be shown to become, you know, like when they wanted Jack Torrance to become crazy, and because this thing is lurking in him all along, you know, this alcoholism thing. And Steven Weber plays, I mean, which was brave. I mean, you know, you got to take over a role that was played by Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've heard interviews with him, and his thing was that he was going to try not to, you know, he didn't want to rewatch Nicholson. He didn't want to play it that way, you know? So it's got some good stuff. He's a believable Jack. This guy's a good actor. So that's not it. Rebecca De Mornay plays Wendy, which, you know, considering that she's supposed to be pretty in the book, I mean, Shelley Duvall is great, but, you know, I mean, you know, you can't look at the book and see what a knockout that Wendy is and then go, oh, look, Shelley Duvall. Can't, you know, you know, and they tried to do the hedge animals that don't really work. It's 97 CGI, and there's a really lame part at the end. And I don't know, man, like the floating ghosts over graduation. It's just, I don't know. It's tough.
It's not working.
So it's got some stuff that don't work. And it's, you know, and then, you know, when they did Dr. Sleep, they kind of cleaned some of that up. You know, Dick is, you know, survived. Everybody survived. And, you know, I don't know. It's it's tough. I don't like to just crap on it too bad, because I like everyone involved in it, you know, and there's some great actors and things in it, you know, but it's just, man, it's can be a rough go in parts.
Yeah,
it really can. So
it's a big swing, you know.
It's worth watching at least once. If you're a fan of the book, you can watch it, because it does use the book much closer than the Kubrick thing does. But
yeah,
really, I just would go on and, you know, I don't know, man, just watch Dr. Sleep. If you've watched, if you've seen the 1980 Shining, great, and then just watch the director's cut of Dr. Sleep and just let it go. So
fair enough. Dr. Sleep has the little boy, the baseball.
Oh yeah. Jacob Tremblay playing the baseball boy. Yeah.
Really hard to watch.
Yeah, it is. Man, is that, God, that's such a good movie though.
And it's
the
great.
Way
it's
he
great.
Combines everything, puts it together. And Henry Thomas, who's a, you know, he's one of the Flanagan players, essentially. He's in like everything Flanagan does.
Yeah.
Who plays Jack, his character, really does a good job. And he doesn't try to do like a Nicholson imitation, you know, but he plays it well. And, you know, he kind of brings the Overlook back to life in a way. And, but yeah, that's it. If you haven't seen Dr. Sleep, if you read the book and you're like, it was okay. I like the book, but it's not for everybody, I guess. But definitely if you're watch the movie, and definitely watch, but man, make sure that you've got the director's cut. Don't watch the theatrical cut, because Flanagan hated it and didn't like what they did to it. And they took out like almost an hour of the movie. You got to watch the full thing. I know it's a daunting number when you see the 3-hour runtime on it, but man, is it worth it. I rewatch that thing probably once a year. I think that, you know, Ewan McGregor is a great Danny, grown-up Danny, and does a really great job with the material. But anyway, so that's our Shining stuff. So let's should probably speed this up a little bit.
Yeah,
let's talk about It for a minute. Mm-hmm. And because it was one of those films or one of those mini series that everyone, again, one of those beloved series to people who are especially my age or maybe even a little younger, who all think that they just love it because they remember how scary it was on TV.
Yeah.
And it's not terrible. It's not. Because definitely Tim Curry as Pennywise is definitely scarier than, you know, the Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise, in my opinion. I mean, he's the Tim Curry's Pennywise is the reason why so many people don't like clowns. The reason.
Sure.
And it's kinder trauma right there. And I think that that's what people remember so much. They don't remember how cheesy a lot of it is, and that we've got John Boy Walton playing Bill, and you know, you've got Harry Anderson from Night Court as one of the characters, and Venus Flytrap from WKRP is one of the characters. And it's just, you watch it and you go, wow, they couldn't find anybody else, you know, they couldn't, because those people were all TV sitcom people at the whatever at the time. And it's not that they're bad. It's just weird. It's John Boy with a ponytail. And you're going, what is going on here? You know, but it's not bad. It's just, it is what it is. The giant spider at the end ruins it for a lot of people, because it looks like, I think it's the giant spider from Gilligan's Island in that episode. No, I don't think it is, but it looks like it. It's that bad. It's a giant thing covered in carpet, and it's terrible. And you're thinking all this time it was a big spider.
Yeah.
And it never explains it, because there's no time for that in the old one. But so then in 2017, I was so excited that they were putting out something that was a little more faithful. And honestly, It Chapter One is terrifying. It's really good. The kids are fantastic in it.
Yes.
The kids are so good in that movie. And, you know, and so when you have that, it's going to be hard to top it, because the second half of it is never as good as the first one anyway.
Yeah.
So the second half of the book, we don't give a shit about the adults. It's not as good. And so you got the adults, and then the second half of the original, the 90, you know, miniseries, not as good, because the adults are like, oh, are you kidding with these people? You know, who picked these people?
Right.
It's Venus, you know, it's Venus from DKRP, you know? And so it's tough to get past. And then they picked great people for the adults, but it just doesn't work as well. It's just not as good of an entry. I mean, they were smart. I'll tell you what was smart about it, because honestly, I think a lot of people would have went, pass. But they brought in the kids too. So they did a lot of back and forth with the kids and the adults. So the adults didn't get as much screen time, which is how it needed to be. Because even though all great actors and great fits, it just, I don't know. It just didn't. It was a very anticlimactic. And then the ending, oof.
Yeah.
But, you know, the ending was rough. I mean, they were smart that they didn't bring in a big mechanical spider. But on the other hand, I don't think that that was what they had in mind. I mean, it works in the book where everybody's going through this ritual and they're shouting insults at Pennywise. But on film in 2019, yeah, watching Pennywise deflate like a pumpkin you left out past Halloween.
Yeah. I was pretty upset.
Yeah,
I was pretty upset about it. Yeah.
So, yeah, that kind of could have put a damper on the whole thing. I've rewatched it. I still enjoy the movies up until a point. But yeah, things just sort of get, I don't know, I don't even know what the right word is, but it just sort of falls apart toward the end and in the second half. And it's too bad. That was always going to be a tough one. They had to know that going in, that it's always been considered the lesser half of the story,
right?
And they tried to salvage it with the kids, but man, I don't know, it's still rough.
Did I tell you that one of the stories they got was, I believe, the first scene that Bill Skarsgård had with the kids that he got to film, I think it's when he comes out of the refrigerator in the house, and he's running up and screaming at one of the kids. He's like, I'm screaming at him, and I'm, you know, spit, and the kid's crying and all this stuff. And he's like, as soon as they yelled cut, I was like, hey, you know, you okay? And all that. And he was like, dude, no, that was so good. Like, let's do it again. Just give me more.
Yeah,
like, because I forget they're professional,
sophisticated actors, you know, and
professional little actors, you know. Mm-hmm. So
and they're great. Amazing. And when I see those, when I see any of those kids pop up in anything else, of course, they're not really that young anymore, but I always say, oh, look, it's Bill, you know, or whoever, you know, and it's like, I remember how good the kids were.
Yeah.
And it's not that the adults weren't, because all of them were great. It's just I've seen those adults in how many things. Jessica Chastain, you know, and it's all these people that you recognize from so many movies, but these kids at that point, other than Finn Wolfhard, I really hadn't seen much of the other kids very much. And so seeing them in that, you're like, wow, these kids are great. And now I get to see them in other stuff. And I'm like, great. So
well, now it's so good that like now if I see one of those kids pop up now, it like has my attention, you know, because.
Yeah, absolutely. Good actors, absolutely. You know? For how good they are. So that's it. We talked about The Shining. Let's talk about Pet Sematary for a minute. You know, the 1989 film is one of my favorites.
It's great.
Yes. I know there's some things in it that aren't fantastic. It's 1989, but I think everybody in it is good. Some are great. You know, it doesn't matter what actor you put in the place of Judd Crandall. I'm always going to miss Fred Gwynne because Fred Gwynne is perfect in that role. He's always going to be Judd in my head. I'm always going to hear him talking with that main accent that he puts on. And it's so over the top. Main accent is what makes it good.
I love it.
You say it's over the top. It's like you see something with people with a Boston accent and you're like, no, they don't talk that way. Yeah, I got a friend from Boston who I like to meet say he's going to park the car in the garage.
Right.
You know, I got to hear it, you know, or in the yacht, you know, and you're like, okay, they really do talk this way. And so when you see Fred Gwynne in that doing that accent and, you know, sometimes dead is better, you know, it's like, you know, you're never going to top that. So you can put John Lithgow in the 2019 remake.
Yes.
And you can have, you know, the guy that plays the dad who I can't remember. He's a great actor, better than Dale Midkiff, who is the dad in the other one, who's a little lame, but he's okay. But he's a late 80s actor. So you kind of have him. The guy that plays the dad.
Jason
Clark has been in so many things and he's great. I think he's a great actor. I love that guy. You know, but he's Australian. I don't know if you knew that. Or
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but he's been in so many things and he's so good. And so I liked the remake. I thought, that's kind of cool. We're going to do something different with it. I'm okay with that. I'm all right. But then in the end, it didn't work because I need the things with Ellie. I need Ellie to lose her shit.
Right.
I need Ellie at grandma and grandpa's house. And because Ellie has The Shining, I need that. You know, I don't need, you know, I don't need her as the dead girl. I mean, it just, I know, you know, and the reason I think they did that is because originally Stephen King's initial plan was to kill off Ellie and have her, but he changed his mind and decided against it because Gage was just too little to do the emotional stuff that we needed Ellie to do. And so that's why this doesn't work for me anyway. That's why it doesn't work as well, because you don't have the depth of character that you have. Plus, I mean, there's nothing going to be scarier than Zelda.
Right.
No, the original. Zelda is terrifying. In the original film. And in this one, she just kind of mean, you know,
I
got a tough time with it. So, but no, I mean, I've watched it. I've tried rewatching it. It's okay. That's all it is.
Yeah. And I mean, it's tough that it didn't work simply because like you talk about the cast, so like bringing in like Jonathan Lithgow, like, he's amazing, has big shoes,
great
to fill,
actor.
But a perfect, like,
but no main accent.
You know, it just
what happened? Why does he not have an accent? I don't understand.
Yeah,
he lives in Maine. He's lived in Maine his whole life. Why doesn't he have an accent? He should have one. Bothered me, but I guess it would have been like, oh, I'm going to imitate Fred Gwynne.
Exactly.
You know? So I don't know. The other problem I have with it is that they still didn't bring in Judd's wife, who's see, they need to do a Pet Sematary miniseries.
Yep.
It needs like 10 episodes because you need Norma. Norma dies, and that is the kid's first, you know, connection with death. That's who Ellie is close with Norma, and she dies, and it sets up everything. And by not using her in the movies, I think it's a fuck up. I really do.
Gotcha.
And yet they never, every time I call and I complain, no one listens.
Steven block me on Twitter.
Did you see Bloodlines that came out last year, the Pet Cemetery kind of prequel?
Yeah.
And you know how I am about prequels, but yeah. I kind of enjoyed it. I think I'm one of the few people who liked it. I thought it was fine. It was unnecessary, totally unnecessary.
Yeah.
We already know that. I thought that the version that Judd tells in the 89 version, where you get to see Timmy Baderman, I thought that was scary. You know, I thought it was scary, and it doesn't need an entire film. I mean, sure. You know, I mean, it was okay. You get why he doesn't think anyone should bury anyone at Pet Cemetery. I get it.
Right.
I get it. You know, we don't really need a whole film about it, but I've seen worse. You know, it was all right. It was okay. It's nice to revisit characters. That's the only fun thing about it. But on the other hand, again, you know how I feel about prequels. Is it really necessary? Did we really need it? No. So so finally, let's end with The Stand. You know, as far as remakes go, in 1994, Mick Garris did a week-long version of The Stand. It's problematic in some ways, you know, now, as far as 94 goes, had a great cast. I'm always going to see Gary Sinise, is always going to be Stu Redman. Molly Ringwald is always going to be, you know, it's just, those are how I'm going to see the characters. But so in 2020, CBS made this huge announcement. They were doing a remake of The Stand. And they decided, for whatever reason, not to tell it in a linear way, which makes absolutely no sense. it makes no sense, because this is a story that, like The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings, it's a quest. This book is a quest. It is about characters who come together as the Fellowship of the Ring, etc., and have to make a journey. But we don't get to see that journey except in flashbacks. So it makes no fucking sense. It starts with the movie with people already in Boulder and already in Vegas, and you don't even know who they are. And the backstories are so quick because they're a flashback. I know they were trying to do something different, and I applaud your thought of doing something different, but this actually could have been good.
Yeah.
Now, as I said, some of the choices were bad. Well, some of the choices are bad in both of them. Let's start with Tom Cullen, you know, the M-O-O-N that spells, you know, The Stand. Yeah. I like the way they handle that in the remake, because you can't just, it's like, you know, people used to complain about the magical Negro characters. Well, he's like, Stephen King has some magical, you know, mentally impaired people.
Right.
And, but, you know, this stuff's written in the 70s. Okay. It was a little different time. So in 94, that was still like, you couldn't really take a lot of flack for that. Sure. But in this one, they decided to take Tom's character, and he was a former football player, which explained his size, who'd just taken too many knocks to the head.
Right.
And that worked for me. I thought that was a great way to do it. I like the guy that played Nick, although he does not get enough screen time. You know, they don't build the characters the way we needed them to. We don't love Stu the way we need to, because we're not given enough time with him. You know, and even though, again, you got good actors in all these parts, it just wasn't the same. It just wasn't. You know, and I don't even get me started on Trash Can Man in the remake. What was that about? I don't even understand that. You got a guy in like bondage gear walking around jacking off all the time. I'm like, I don't think that's what Stephen King had in mind with Trash Can Man. I thought Matt Frewer was a little easier to believe.
He
was great as a nut. So again, you could do the same game I did with Salem's Lot. You can look at comparisons and you could go, well, this was great, but this wasn't. But in the end, I just turned out to be very dissatisfied, even though better special effects, some better acting in a lot of parts. But you didn't have no Ozzie Davis. you know, right there. That's a problem with the judge. Although Greg Kinnear was good as the judge. I got to admit, Greg I really liked him in it. Because I like Greg Kinnear. And honestly, as far as Mother Abigail goes, Ruby Dee, while fantastic, I thought Whoopi Goldberg was really good. Yeah. But again, they didn't give her enough to do.
Yeah.
You know, there just wasn't enough time, even though it was a long miniseries. They were playing this stupid game with going back and forth with flashbacks instead of just telling the story from the beginning the way it was supposed to be told. I wish that I could edit it and make my own version of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Holding the right order. And I think I would really like it. I really do. I want to start with Captain Trips. I don't want it something that happened, you know, 5 years ago, and now we're going to do flashbacks. I want to start with that. But I will say, I loved the Larry Underwood character much more in the remake.
Yeah.
And I definitely liked Baby, Can You Dig Your Man much better in the rap version that we got in the new one, because the original hurts my brain.
Yeah, it's painful.
So bad. And honestly, Adam Stork, who played Larry, he's really not great in that either. And, you know, I know that Gary, you know, or the Larry Underwood character was supposed to, he was a take on Bruce Springsteen in the book.
Oh, okay.
So that's definitely not Bruce Springsteen that Adam Stork is playing, but I was all with them updating it. I thought that was cool and I'd like that better. But if somebody out there knows how to edit things like that, could you please make me a copy of this so that it's in order? Because I can't figure out how to do it on my own, but I really want to, so I could watch it the way it's supposed to be. So if you can let me know. Plus, oh no, Miguel Ferrer, because of course he's dead. But yeah, he was so great in that too. Anyway, so that's just my complaints about it. I know I've just complained for like the last 40 minutes, but
somebody will get some kicks out of it.
Maybe. So anyway, we gotta wrap this up though.
Yeah,
is like a really long episode.
We don't even have, like, normally with these episodes, we don't even do all the outro stuff.
You're right. So we should probably just wrap this thing up, guys. So thanks for listening to us. And if you make it through this entire episode, you'll hear this. I don't know if you will. You'll probably shut it off and go, God, I'm tired of listening to Troy Bitch. But I hope the guy who knows how to make me a copy of this, the 2020 stand in linear order, is listening and still listening so that they will hear me ask for it. Anyway, thanks, guys. And we'll be back in, 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
With our next episode. And I think people are going to like this one. It's a good one. And it's a little more recent than a lot of our stories are. So I think people will dig it. So, yeah. Anyway, we'll be back.
Yeah.
And thanks for listening. Check out our Patreon if you want to get the end of our show. And sorry, you were going to say happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Yes, yeah. Happy Halloween, everybody. Thanks again. And thanks for continuing to stick with us on the show. Even if you don't listen to this one, thank you. We'll be back with a regular episode soon. So
sweet.
Thanks, guys.
See you later.
Bye.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? And sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.